other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, only a podcast on the internet sponsored by Butter. You can drink it. My name's Aaron, here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hey, babies.
Brick.
I imagine drinking butter is both wonderful and terrible at the same time.
I mean, I would know since I'm the butter drinker in this group. And then we have from Old Ireland, Old Irish Nico.
Hello.
Folks, today's topic has been in the planning for, or in the running for a long time. I think like maybe 2 years ago, a listener, that's too stretching it too far. Someone who listens to the podcast wrote in and suggested
that I'll tell you who it was.
Yeah, pull the name up. Suggested we talk about Watchmen. We had mentioned it in our episode about books that were translated into movies, or maybe it was specifically the superhero movies episode, and we had tossed it off. The Watchmen movie by Zack Snyder from 2008 or 9 was so bad.
It was listener Andrew.
Yes. Thank you, listener Andrew. Suggested that we read the comic and talk about it. That makes sense. We're a literature podcast, ostensibly. It's a great suggestion, and we were like, we're definitely going to do that, and I think we sat on it for 2 years, and so now we have finally done it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're getting there. We'll do the second half. So Watchmen is it's a good one to talk about because it's an important, I would say, piece of literature. And certainly there's... I think it hits our wheelhouse in a lot of ways, but I'm curious to see what all your reactions are. I want to start with, well, so first of all, Watchmen is a 12-issue miniseries or maxi-series that DC Comics published in 1986. It was written by Alan Moore, drawn by Dave Gibbons, and the colorist was, oh gosh, John Sinclair, I think is his name. I've forgotten it. Fuck. My apologies to the colorist. John Higgins, there you go. Thank you. Very quickly became like this sort of monumental comic. It's held up as, like, you know, one of the key examples of comics as literature when that debate comes up, along with Maus and Persepolis, things like that. It's a comic that's almost hard to read, I think, because it has so much built up around it. There's so much mythology and so much. It's like watching Citizen Kane, right? It's like this is the movie, this is the comic. I first read Watchmen when I was 12, maybe, I think, maybe 11. I got it for my brother for Christmas one year, and then I just stole it and read it in the car right over my grandparents' house that day. So I read it relatively young, not super young, but youngish, and I've read it, I want to say, like 10 times probably since then. I've come back to it quite a bit. I want to hear what you all's experiences with it are. I know, Brick, you read it before, right?
Yeah, I read it maybe 10 years ago.
Okay, and just the once?
Yeah, this is my second time reading.
And when you read it the first time, what was
it? I might have read it twice the first time. I can't remember, but I haven't. It's not something I've gone back to frequently.
Do you remember what like inspired you to read it in the first place?
I think you told me to read it. Honestly. It was during the Chamber 4 days.
That adds up. Nico, what about you? This is your first read or no? I can't remember.
No, I think it's about the same. Like I read it 10, 15 years ago and I haven't gone back to it.
I think Nico and I might have read it at the same time. I remember talking to you about it.
Same copy. Cuddled up next to each other.
Over each shoulder, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not done with
I read it to Nico, and he described the pictures to me.
Yeah.
As a bedtime story.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, my first impression going back to it was that, like, I can see why it's so kind of, you know, glorified in the canon, because I think it holds up. A lot going on, and I like the way that he does. The drama is, like, it's not, it's like, it's an adult comic book. It's like, so I kind of wonder, Aaron, how you felt about it at 12, because I have to imagine a lot of the politics and the conspiracy theories and all that kind of stuff went over your head, or did not.
So you're saying Aaron was dumb as a kid?
It tracks.
Yeah. Aaron's dumb as an adult.
At 12, I would not have... you know, known the ramifications of like the alternate history in which we win the Vietnam War and Nixon is like, you know, lionized and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I had some of that because I was a history dork as a kid. But you're right. I didn't. I mean, for sure, I think the first read for most people, maybe not, but I'm willing. I guess we'll ask Dave because Dave, it's your first read, right? This is your first time with Watchmen. I think that everyone's first read, you're mostly focused on the mystery, right? And trying to figure out what's, you know, who killed the comedian, what's going on with that. And it's not until subsequent reads that, like, all of the rest of it kind of unfolds for you and keeps unfolding. And like this, like I said, my 10th or 11th time reading it, and there was new stuff this time around, which was great. One of those books that you hear that cliche a lot, like every time I read it, it's something new. It literally is the case.
New stuff story-wise or new stuff art-wise or both?
Both, yeah. Like nuances in the story or just like different characters to focus on. you know.
Yeah, even coming back to it 10 years later, knowing the ending changes my read of this pretty significantly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. For this time around,
We need to be, if we're doing half and half, we need to be very careful not to talk about the ending.
Yeah, because I don't remember.
Yeah, well, we don't want to spoil Dave.
For Dave's sake, yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking issues 1 through 6 today, and we'll get to 6 through 12, or 7 through 12 next time. This time I read the Annotated Watchmen, which came out a couple years ago, and it's black and white, so there's no color, which was kind of a bummer. I wish the color version had been in there. But it has, you know, annotations on the side. The annotator, Leslie something or other, I can't remember actor's name either. I didn't bring any information, obviously. Just sort of gives you, you know, details and insights into the construction of the text. It's not meant to be interpretive, but more meant to be just like more information. And so I did pick up some things through that as well that were really cool, just things in the background.
Why do you think they chose to make it black and white?
Probably to highlight...
Just cost?
No, probably to highlight the art, I would say. Like, so that you are looking for, like, details in the background that might be obscured by color, potentially. I don't know. I think that it actually needed the color.
Yeah, I really like the color. It's very kind of distinct.
Yeah, and when I looked back at some panels before today, I was like, oh yeah, fuck, I missed the color on this. I really want to read it again with the color one more time.
That's a strange choice.
Yeah. So I guess that the first question I have is, what did you pay attention to most in this read? What stood out to you as the most significant thing in this initial read through or whatever this sort of 1 through 6 read for you was?
I want to hear Dave's answer first.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like you mentioned, and that's why I asked about art versus story on reread. I feel like there's a lot going on in the panels that I'm not really stopping to pay attention to, mm-hmm. like a lot of detail work. Cause I'm just trying, I just want to know what the story right. is. So I can see going back on reread, like a lot of stuff jumping out at me that is not this first time through.
Yeah, definitely.
I find myself looking, I think similarly at a lot of the background stuff. And like one of the things I noticed kind of right off the bat is the first time you see the Who Watches the Watchmen graffiti, mm-hmm. it's not complete.
It never is.
And yeah, so you would, I didn't know that. So, you know, I think most comics would just show the thing and like, this is how we're setting the world and like blah, 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 blah. But it's just like purposefully stuck in the background.
Yeah, there'd be like the first panel basically of I think most comics, like just like put it right yeah. out there and be like, here's the thing. This is like a bit more subtle in the background like that.
Yeah, and instead you just see parts of the words or whatever, and you have to put it together yourself.
Yeah, there are lots of little codes or like motifs like that. There's, you'll see graffiti on the buildings of the two, like, Hiroshima lovers. It's like the silhouette of a man and woman embracing in black, and the references to yeah. people's like bodies shadowed on the walls after the atom bomb was dropped in Hiroshima.
Yeah, right. I remember, I mean, I knew going into it, really the only thing I knew about this was that it was kind of influenced by or reflected the fears of the time of like nuclear war with the Soviet Union. So I wondered if it would be dated for that reason. But like Nico said, it doesn't feel that way at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, I'm actually going to say quite the opposite, that it feels even more, maybe not more, but like the sense of apocalypse and the like, the clock ticking of like cutting down to midnight when things are gonna like all be over yeah. felt really acute. Reading it now, like it feels just as yeah. tenuous and scary. And so that kind of constant sense of like ticking down and getting closer and closer and time running out really affected me this time much more than maybe before when I was reading as a kid.
Yeah, or like even five than it would have maybe 5 years ago.
Right. have you been reading the supplemental materials in the back of every issue, like the little like excerpts and stuff like that?
I did until the two. I read the excerpts of Hollis Mason's book, and then I stopped. So I'll go back and revisit those. But I liked it. I remember asking you, Aaron, if I can skip that, if it's just like supplemental material they added for like a new edition or something. But you said that I should read them, and I'm glad I did. I liked even the writing in it.
Yeah, he does a really good job of swapping and mimicking the voices in those. Like, it reads like some kind of celebrity yeah. autobiography, yeah. you know? It's
yeah, I mean, he can do the pastiche. So there's the Hollis Mason excerpts. There's the, maybe it's in a later chapter, but the one from Dan Dreiberg's essay about owls that reads like scholarship kind of combined with memoir. There's like cheesy interviews. Like, it all feels, the psychologist's notes on Rorschach, they all feel like they fit that sort of voice. It's really effective. He's really good at sort of that kind of mimicking or sort of displacement. And also, I think those things are so important because it seems like The Watchmen is about comics, right? It's about sort of like the process of reading and what it means to be a reader. And it pushes you to put together ideas and themes and connections from all those different sort of sources. You have to, if you just read for the mystery, then you have to reread it again to get the rest of the stuff that adds up. Like, you're kind of always like extracting different details, and those back matter supplements are so full of that kind of stuff, right? All the stories about Hollis Mason's growing up, or the doctor's like schematic of Dr. Manhattan and what it means for like a nuclear power to be like alive and walking around, all gives you so much, a much richer experience than just reading the comic panel to panel, right? It's like you have to like really learn to read and learn to read it specifically. And that's something that I didn't pick up until I was much older, for sure. Even reading a couple times through as a teenager and into my early 20s was still just like, yeah, this is a cool story. It's really, you know, affecting. But then I started to look at, oh, but how's it put together? Like, what's the form of it and what's important about that? And that's maybe even more rewarding too. Like all the patterns of the transitions, right? There's like these constant sort of like panel transitions where the image and the panel of the ninth panel, the first page echoes the top panel of the next page. There's at least kind of like little like echoes like that. The whole thing is built so deliberately that it's making you smarter as you read it, basically. Like, it makes you like a smarter reader because you learn to pick up on things and look for things, which is something you can't say for like a lot of literature.
My biggest impression reading it was that it's dense. It's very like, there's a lot of stuff going on, as opposed to Mr. Miracle that we also read at the same time. It feels like a lot kind of crammed into 12 issues, and so there's almost never just one thing going on. It's usually like there's two storylines that he's like jumping back and forth between that kind of play off each other and inform each other, which is interesting. Yeah.
I was listening this time around. There's almost no backstory or there's no like B plots. There's just A plots, right? Like everyone's story is front and center and everyone gets time in the spotlight, right? So Rorschach's story and Dr. Manhattan's story and Laurie's story, they're all, you know, roughly the same, but different. And they all get their own time and they all feel just as important and just as vital. Like, you want to know what happens to Rorschach just as much as you want to know what happens to Laurie, you know, what happens with her and Dan's relationship and that kind of stuff. I guess you could argue that the newsstand guy and the little kid are like B plots kind of, but even they get so much time in camera. They're an A plot too. Like, everyone's story matters. And I really like that.
I think that, yeah, they do kind of seem like background, like for both like the city and the world and people who aren't superheroes.
Yeah.
Their reaction to everything. And then a lot of that kind of more direct, like, reading comic books thing.
Yeah, and sort of the kid reading the pirate comics, and the pirate comic is, like, this double narrative for... It's, like, a retelling of the Watchmen story, essentially, which is cool, too. That's, like, this embedded meta-narrative. Those first six issues, did anyone strike you as being particularly memorable this time, or ones you enjoyed?
I don't know about enjoyed, but I found myself a little more drawn to Laurie's story than I remember.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
I don't know, she's very complicated. I forgot she was like 14 or 15 when she got together with Manhattan, which really makes it creepy.
Yeah.
And then just kind of seeing, she's kind of more of a thread between the other characters than some of the rest. She sort of moves between them a little more. She's also like the least awful. Yeah. of them, you know, like they're all like kind of bad people. Maybe not the night owl dude, but
well, they're all flawed for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Rorschach's like a dick, and the comedian was clearly a
fascist,
bad person. Yeah, and Manhattan is not human,
right.
Not really. I don't know. I just found her a little more compelling than I had remembered.
Yeah, she and Dan are the most like relatable, I think, in that sense. But yeah, you're right. Like, she, it's hard to tell what Laurie wants, right? Like, what is she looking for in life, right? It's like, I think that she's just lost. And I, you know, that's that for sure. With Dan, I always just feel sad for Dan. He just seems so pathetic, right?
I'm sorry, Dan is who?
Night Owl. Yeah. The retired Night Owl 2, whatever. And his like awkward fumblings with trying to flirt with Laurie. Just like sad.
And then as soon as like Dr. Manhattan comes back, she's like, okay, bye.
Yeah, she's like, okay.
Yeah, and there's definitely that thing, especially because like he's in, you know, a love triangle with Dr. Manhattan. It's like, fuck, like, what are you going to do against this? Like, you know, like it's kind of the same as, you know, everybody else in the world is, but romantically, you know, it's like, okay, well, he's invincible and can't be stopped, can't be like, whatever he wants he gets, you know. And it's Yeah, that kind of a thing is kind of made a little bit more subjective through Night Owl, I think.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a different way to think about power, right? If Dr. Manhattan represents like the reality of power and how terrifying it is and in some ways uncontrollable it is, then Dan is in a different way through like a love triangle trying to figure out how to respond to the threat of this power, right?
Yeah, and even though like Dr. Manhattan isn't really, like, he's not bad, like he's trying to be good, I guess, but he's definitely an asshole.
He's neither good nor bad, right? He's just like, he's like an observer. Yeah. He's trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
But like the scene during his flashback at the comedian's funeral when they're in Vietnam and the comedian shoots the pregnant woman and he's like, you just killed a pregnant woman. And he's like, yeah, you didn't stop me. You could turn it to bubbles or dust or whatever. You just watched me do it. He's like, you don't give a shit about people. You just are curious about equations. And then he walks away and at the hand's like, yep, basically. Like,
that's true. That was a good moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also really liked the issue that spent a lot of time with Dr. Manhattan and the you know, movement of time. And that was super well done. Of the six issues, that maybe is the passage, I guess, that jumped out to me as being most effective, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, that was my, this read too, that was the issue that stood out to me the most.
Where he's like on Mars and
building
the thing.
And all the games it plays with time and like matching panels and matching captions and like, you know, I'm here looking at a photograph and I'm also in 30 years ago, I'm in this atomic bomb lab or whatever. And the bits with his, like his father was a watchmaker and he like threw the cogs out and was like, once the atom bomb was dropped, he was like, there's no point to this anymore because the future is just much more terrifying.
Yeah,
I thought that was great. And I didn't notice it ever until I read the annotations this time, but that's the only time you get internal narration from a character. You get Rorschach's journal, but not his like internal thoughts. But that's the only chapter you get like someone thinking in the captions, which is cool because it's such a common comic book trope is getting thought bubbles or you know, captions with sort of internal monologues. This is the only one that actually does it, which is cool. Which again suggests like Dr. Manhattan's special status, like he's outside of time and outside of our nature, or the comics nature at least.
Yeah,
in a way outside of humanity, like the sort of non-human.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I find him just insufferable, though.
Dr. Manhattan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Tell us more about that.
He's just like, it's just so hard to relate to him. It's like, okay, yeah. It's like he somehow has no more empathy, it seems. Like, he's just kind of, like, he's so inhuman that he's like, just, like, I can't, like, just the same way, I guess, like, he can't relate to people anymore. Like, I can't relate to him. It's like, I just want him to like either fuck off or do something, but not just like mope around and be, you know, a big blue asshole who like dips in and
big
out.
Blue
like,
asshole.
Big blue dick,
big blue
maybe.
Crank swinging around. There's that scene in the first issue when I think it's his introduction, maybe, when he's in bed with Lori and there's like all of a sudden three of them. It's like they're having sex and she's like, this is great. And there's like six hands. She's like, what the fuck's going on? And she wakes up. He's like, oh my God. He's like, oh, I thought you liked this. I thought this was cool. And then he's also in the other room doing electronics work. She's like, this is so fucked. Like, what an insane choice.
Yeah, because he's not even thinking about her. He's just like, all right, go over there. I'll create three clones to fuck you while I actually think about some more fucking equations because that's all I care about.
Right, like she's also an equation to be solved.
He does seem bothered to some degree that he may be giving cancer to these people.
Yeah. Once he feels like he's under attack, then he has a very human reaction, which is like, get away from me. But then his response to it is to go to Mars.
Yeah. But he doesn't, I just never get the feeling that he really cares. It's more that like, yeah, like you're saying, like he's under attack and he gets his feelings hurt and then he goes to fucking Mars.
Yeah, it's he
like,
goes God. Away, but he's looking at this photograph. He's kind of,
yeah,
you know, walking through his relationships with some of these people, it feels like there's some feeling there.
Yeah.
It seems like he's trying to process, like, what it means to have feelings still, right?
Yeah.
Like, he wants his timeline to make sense, and he wants his life to matter, but if you're living in a reality where you can experience time happening simultaneously, how do you experience emotion, right? If you know, if you can be present at both your like first birthday and your parents' deaths, like what do you, if you feel those things happening at once, how do you feel sadness, right? Or joy? Yeah. That's, that chapter hits home so hard, as like all the stuff about his girlfriend, Janie, I think was her name, and their relationship falling apart. And it's like, it's hard and it's sad, but also you kind of feel like, well, it's, does he, what does sadness really mean for him anymore? And what does it mean to have this like lost relationship? Like he regrets hurting her maybe, but also doesn't quite know the consequences of that hurt. And again, he's on Mars. Like he's building a palace out of crystal on Mars. So like he's doing this ultimate, you know, godlike task. So it raises the question, like, how do you handle grief or any kind of feeling like that? Does this section include the chapter about Rorschach's backstory with the psychologist, or is that issue 7?
Yeah, that's 6.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. That issue is the one that fucked me up the most as a kid, and still does. I mean, with obvious reasons, right? It's horrible and brutal. But that, man, that panel sequence when he discovers the child murderer's, like, lair or whatever, and there's, like, a three-panel section where it's like shows the faces of the guy's dogs, and then like Rorschach's the hand with the meat cleaver over his head, and then cut of the Rorschach blot. Fuck, like that whole, oh my god, destroyed me. And it's still hard to read even as an adult. I've read it so many times. I know it's coming and I always dread it because I just I hate reading it. It's so unpleasant and sad. And but I don't feel well, I don't know, do you feel sad for Rorschach?
Sad, no.
Is he a tragic hero?
He's tragic.
I don't know.
Is he a hero?
I think he might be my favorite character.
Yeah.
Like, not like I like him the most, but I think he's the best character. Because, like, he has such a clear motivation and such a clear character, I don't know, development, that he's clearly just a, he's a crazy, like, right-wing conspiracy theorist. So he's basically QAnon, but... QAnon who like goes and like actually beats up like pedophiles, you know? It's like if QAnon actually found the pedophiles that QAnon
lived in a world where that was real,
right?
Yeah.
And so it's I find him extremely compelling, even though I think he's obviously a huge asshole. So that's a nice, I don't know, I feel so conflicted about him. It's like he's like the opposite of Dr. Manhattan. It's like all he does is just feel like aggrieved and like lash out at people and everything.
Yeah, and his Rorschach's worldview is black and white, right? It's like his face mask. Like there's good and there's bad and there's no in between, there's no compromise. He can save the world and it's all miserable. Whereas Manhattan is all about like, well, nothing is anything because everything exists at the same time. There's no polarities. It's just this like one big complex cosmic equation to solve. Yeah, you're right. Like Rorschach is the most compelling character for sure. He's the one that you root for, I think. Certainly in the first reads.
Yeah, like kind of despite myself, I rooted for him. It's like, yeah, this guy is such a dick, but all right, let's see where he goes now.
Yeah. Brick, you're making a skeptical face there.
I definitely don't root for Rorschach.
Not even the first time?
But I do. The first time, I considered him the main character, but I wonder how much of that is the book starts with him.
Yeah. That first issue is structured on his visits to every character. Like, he goes and talks to everyone, introduces them all. Yeah. So, yeah. And he does, I mean, he's the investigator, I guess, right? He's the one who's mostly in charge of the mystery story. So he's the one you are most compelled to follow that first read through for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll talk about the ending when we get to our next episode with this. But the ending makes that, your sense of Rorschach's role much more complicated, which is really, I think, very interesting. We haven't mentioned the art too much. I want to talk about Dave Gibbons before we close out this episode. I mean, Dave Gibbons is amazing. His art is so good. It's the perfect fit for this because it has that, everything looks very real. And everyone looks like, Dave Gibbons' characters all look kind of pudgy, which is really cool. Like, even though, like, Rorschach is pretty thin, but, like, even Ozymandias, when he's in his, like, little suit, he looks like a big, like, fleshy human. Like, he looks substantial.
Yeah, and the Night Owl definitely looks like he's, like, 15 years past his prime.
Yeah, totally. He gives it, there's that sort of sense of weight. And there's really good framing, too. Like, there's so many, I don't know, like, the cinematic look of it all. It's not wide panel, you know, in early 2000s comics, what they were kind of in wide panels were called cinematic. This feels more cinematic because it feels like a camera is moving, right? That first the first page, the sort of gradual zoom up from the gutter with the smiley face button into the, like, whatever, 37th floor of the building where the comedian lived. It's this bravura performance on the first page of the comic. You're like, what the fuck? This is going to be amazing. And it just becomes more and more amazing as it goes along. All the design work, all the detail, the lens in the background, like I said, things you'll pick up on, or not even pick up on, but be sort of directed towards when the annotations. Like the smiley face motif, the smiley face badge with the blood splatter on it, that sort of circle with a little, like, slash in the top left, shows up everywhere, all over the place. And you never notice it because it's so subtle. But then what, all of a sudden, as you read the annotations, like, oh yeah, it's in every issue, it's almost every page, basically. There's, like, constant little reminders, these motifs. I think this ultimate question of Watchmen maybe is, when you read it, are you reading it for, is the story as satisfying as the experience of reading it? By which I mean, like, do we come back to it because the story is so good, or do we come back to it because the reading mechanisms are so complex and there's obviously so much, like Nico said, density to it? But is this density for density's sake, right? That's be a question I think it's worth considering, like, you know, to what end? You know, all these tricks, all this artifice, is that enough? Is that worth it? I think that some critics will say yes and some will say no. Do you have thoughts on that?
I feel like the ending plays into my answer for that.
Yeah. Nico?
I think it's more the world, because right. It's like so clearly like kind of a slice in time, and like so much has happened before the story starts, and you know, and there's so much that you just can't be addressed in the 12 issues that it feels like there's a lot more going on in this world than this can even get into. And there's so much, like, every detail is considered and like constructed, and so there's a lot of depth just to get into there, like with the like superhero like law and right. That kind of tension, you know, like, yeah, I think for me that's the draw.
Right, there's just so much there to pull out and tease out.
Yeah.
Dave, what about you? What is your sense so far? Is the story compelling to you, or is the artifice of the narrative compelling, or is it both, or is it neither?
I don't know. Like I said before, I feel like I don't feel like I'm racing through for the story necessarily, but I'm more focused on the story than I am on a lot of what's going on in the background. And I kind of feel like maybe that's totally necessary. Like if I tried to pay attention to everything at once on this first read, it would just be kind of overwhelming. So I definitely see this as a book that I would have to reread to get the full effect of.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true. There's just too many layers to, even a really expert reader wouldn't catch like half this stuff in the first read through. I think you're right, because the story to me is compelling. So it's makes you want to read through it. And also the grid, the 9-panel grid makes you just like tick through it pretty quickly. Like you can just, you feel like your pace at a certain level is like I'm reading, getting more information. So you're always kind of like in this space. Whereas if it was more a different sort of grid or page layout, you might feel a bit sort of slower in time, so you're processing more stuff. You know, there's not very many splash pages to dig in.
Yeah. One experience I'm, I guess, particularly impressed by is that I don't feel invested in anyone's story more than anyone else's invested in or interested in. I'm kind of equal. Like, so like sometimes it will happen in a novel with multiple points of view, it'll switch to a different character who you don't care about as much, and you're like, oh fuck, can we just get back to the person, the character I really care about? But
yeah, every plot reinforces other plots and sort of is interesting as the others in that sense. Yeah, I totally agree. Let's wrap this one up now, and we'll conclude this discussion soon once Dave has finished issues 7 through 12. Listeners, do not spoil Dave on Watchmen. This is a very rare occurrence to have someone not know what the plot of Watchmen is. Let's just let him have it. Let's just, if you're a tricky listener, let's say, who makes prank accounts to joke with us on Twitter.
The Watchman jumps in front of a train.
But tell us your thoughts on the first six issues for sure on Twitter at YakBabies and emails at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts there. Also, find us on Patreon. Patreon.com/YakBabies has access to our secret podcast. For $1 a month, you can get all our bonus episodes. There's games and monster drafts and other kind of shenanigans. I bet there's going to be a lot of holiday fun happening on the Patreon podcast sometime soon. So check that out for sure. And also our merch. We have lots of merch. Find our links on Twitter, on our Twitter bio. There's some good mugs and shirts out there. There's some A-plus classics. So check those out as well. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all the loyal listeners, and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, and William Howard Taft.